Justice Miller Lerman is recused from this matter. Mr. Jorgensen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice.
May it please the court, counsel.
My name is John Jorgensen. I'm from the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I'm here today representing Carlos Tucker on his direct appeal from the conviction on three counts. And in this particular case, I did allege three main assignments of error on his direct appeal. First, the admission of the YFPR DNA evidence. Secondly, the sufficiency of the evidence to sustain the conviction. And thirdly, then the excessiveness of the sentence. And with leave of the court, I would like to submit the sentence portion of the appeal on my brief and would like to primarily address, unless there are other questions concerning the sentence, would like to primarily address the admission of the YSTR DNA evidence, because I do think that that also plays into the second assignment of error, the sufficiency of the evidence.
What, before you get started, what precisely is your assignment of error with respect to the YSTNR DNA evidence?
The YSTR DNA evidence should not have been admitted. That the district court erred in permitting its admission at trial and overruling and denying the pretrial Schaeferman motion in that regard, primarily because of its impact on the jury hearing such match type testimony. I believe in the transcript and the motion itself, over six pages, outlined the different grounds upon which there were issues with that particular type of evidence and their intended use in this particular case. So it's not so much as a matter of that YSTR DNA type of analysis is new or novel, because as we see in a lot of the different exhibits that were offered and utilized and referenced in the respective briefs, this type of analysis has been around for and widely used for at least 10 to 15 years. The bigger concern is how they're intending to use it, because it's typically an exclusionary type of tool, not an inclusionary type of tool. And so when you have the intent of using it in that fashion, it's an intended misuse. And so in that regard, it's something of a outlining of an as-applied type of analysis for the Schaeferman issue there, because really what we're talking about is typically when we're talking with DNA, you're talking about producing odds of 1 in 750 quintillion. I'll leave that up to you to figure out how many zeros that involves in that particular number. And here we're talking about 1 in 1,800. So, I mean.
Before we get to that, though, and the reason for my question is, I didn't see Schaeferman or Daubert cited in your brief in the argument section. I read it as an argument that the district court solely erred under Rule 403. Did I read your brief correctly?
Well, not necessarily, because we asked that the court review the determination as to whether or not the court appropriately ruled in regards to the Schaeferman motion. Now, we don't cite back to Schaeferman or any of the other corresponding cases that have dealt with Schaeferman type of issues in our brief. However, we've outlined in there the essentially, in our Schaeferman motion, outlined, I believe, maybe nine different paragraphs, and then parroted those particular challenges back in our brief. So we kind of outlined the issues and then correspondingly listed them out in the briefing itself. And so it is primarily something of a 403 analysis, which is kind of inherent in a Schaeferman analysis in determining whether or not there was abuse of discretion, which in this particular case there was an abuse of discretion, because it led to an improper conviction when a jury hears something that you can't unring a bell of DNA match, and they lead to a conclusion of conviction. When in the reality, what we can see here from this is that it's not a match type of evidence. What it is including in people that the suspect, all patrilineally related males, as well as an unknown number of unrelated males, into the sample selection of people who could provide a alleged match type of testimony. So it's not necessarily whether or not YSTR DNA evidence has ever been tested for accuracy. It's not a matter of whether it's been peer reviewed. It's not a matter of whether it's a rate of error. It's about, in this particular case, whether or not, as it's intended to be used, has YSTR DNA evidence with that intended purpose ever been tested as being reliable, whether or not there's ever been any demonstration of peer review that YSTR DNA evidence as applied for this particular purpose of using it to include individuals as rather than exclude individuals, or what is the rate of error when we're talking about reducing the population from 1 in 752 quintillion down to 1,800, whether or not there are any sort of standards for applying that particular process, and whether or not it's generally accepted for doing so. And I think what you will find is that there was an abuse of discretion here because it's not generally accepted to be used as an inclusionary type of tool as it was offered at this particular trial. And so that's the real concern as to how the district court erred in its admission of the YSTR DNA type of evidence. And that's also how it led into the second assignment of error, that there was not sufficient reliable and valid evidence offered to sustain this conviction in this particular case.
Isn't that really a 403 argument, that the prejudice outweighs the relevance?
We are using the 403 type of arguments, that it is overly and unduly prejudicial, and utilizing the Daubert analysis to exemplify that, because we don't have an assigned rate of error when we are reducing the population and trying to use it as an inclusionary rather than an exclusionary type of tool. And so
we use the 403 framework. This court should use the 403 framework in deciding this issue.
Well, and using as guideposts for that the analysis of the standard Daubert factors, and looking at whether or not there is any sort of peer-reviewed analysis determining the appropriateness of using YSTR DNA evidence to include individuals rather than exclude them. And I think when you look at that, you'll find that it's not generally accepted, that there is no rate of error in that regard, and so it therefore is an abuse of discretion, and is an abuse of discretion because it is unduly prejudicial. So it's kind of an amalgamation of those analyses. But also,
wasn't there evidence introduced that explained that YSTR DNA doesn't produce the same kind of results as autosomal testing? So you talk about the 1 in 80 quintillion, but there was evidence that this would only reduce it to 1 in 1,800 or whatever the number was. Isn't the fact that evidence was introduced, doesn't that reduce the potential for prejudice? Because no one was trying to trick the jury here. They were told that this isn't like autosomal testing. This is a different kind of DNA testing.
I understand, but it falls back to my earlier statement that this really is a bell that you can't unring. So no matter how eloquent I can be in my closing, no matter how stringent I can be in my cross, I am not going to be able to remove that aura of, oh, there's a DNA match.
Your argument is that in the minds of jurors, they hear DNA match, they're going to automatically assume it's the 1 in quintillion kind of match and not listen to the testimony that this is actually the 1 in 1,800 kind of match.
Well, I'm not saying that jurors aren't necessarily going to listen to testimony and obviate their obligations to adjudicate the matter faithfully, but it is one of those things where you can't really unring it. When they hear a DNA match, that will foreclose and will color everything that they hear thereafter. That's the real problem. And in this particular case, it's so inherently unreliable for a determination that YSTR DNA evidence can be used to include someone as a possible match.
Does this DNA test mean that the person identified had to be either your client or a male relative of your client on his, in his father's family. Is that what this means?
And an unknown number of unrelated males. So it's a real problem there. We don't even know how many. So if in a general sense, maybe I can work some numbers here. If we talk about the general population of the state of Nebraska being approximately 2 million and about 6.5% of those being African-American males, then we're talking, when you break that down to the number of an approximate population of African-American males in the current estimated population of Nebraska, you're talking about a total, when you use the 1 in 1,842 analysis, that produces 70 individuals that could have provided this particular DNA sample. And that's even including that you're only looking at males, because you have the whole problem that I outlined in the pretrial motion, that it specifically excludes females. So actually a female could be a contributor to that DNA analysis, but the YSTR removes that. So we're really talking about an undue limitation of providing information as to who could have been a contributor to match that particular sample. And it would ask that the court make a determination that YSTR DNA...
Can I ask another question?
You may.
Okay. This is in the context of the situation. It's a little bit different than, you don't have an unknown perpetrator. You have a named perpetrator. So this would be more as a corroborating evidence, wouldn't it not?
That's typically what it is used for. That's correct, Justice. It is typically used to exclude particular individuals as suspects in this. And in this particular case, it's also concerning because you have two males who were alleged to have contributed to that particular sample. And so you have all the problems I've outlined before, in addition to that there was yet another unknown male who could have contributed to this particular sample. And so we have a lot of issues with the admission of the YSTR DNA evidence in this particular case. So I would ask that the court...
Let me ask one final question.
Sure.
There are no instructional or admonishment issues related to this. This is purely a, yes, it should have been admitted, no, it shouldn't have been admitted question. That's the way you've brought it to us, right?
That is correct. That's how it's been presented to the court, right. Yes. And if I'm already well past my time, so if there's no any other questions, I would ask that the court determine that the trial court erred in its admission of the DNA evidence, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tangeman, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. The state submits that the district court did not abuse its discretion by admitting YSTR DNA testing. In his brief, Tucker does not attack the science or the methodology of YSTR DNA testing itself. His argument focuses on the statistics and the formulation of the statistics the testing provides.
Isn't his argument ultimately that just DNA is too confusing to the jury?
I think so, yes. I think it's similar to cases this court has addressed in the past, State v. Baldwin, where the argument basically comes down to, we don't think the jury can understand this, and this court has rejected that argument, as has other courts that the district court cited in its order on the Daubert issue in this case. He focuses mainly on the fact that the YSTR testing is less discriminatory than the autosomal DNA testing. The numbers are going to be much smaller with YSTR. And as we just discussed, this court has found that the probability assessments aid triers of fact regarding DNA testing, and that jurors are smart enough to understand and to give appropriate weight to the statistical analysis that DNA testing provides.
And in fact, isn't the converse true? If we don't give them the statistical information, the DNA results could very well be misleading.
Yes, I think that is where the problems have come in the past, and this court has addressed specifically in State v. Johnson, when the jury is told, we have DNA, and they're told nothing regarding the statistics, then the jury is more likely to jump to the conclusion that this is the defendant's DNA. But if they are given the statistics related to that DNA, then they are able to assign it the appropriate weight that it deserves. The expert in this case, Bishop, she did explain to the jury the limitations of the YSTR DNA testing. She testified that while a random match might occur one in several quintillion times with autosomal testing, a random match might occur one in a few thousand times with YSTR testing. Thus, the jury was clearly aware in this case that the results are less probative than the autosomal testing results. And as the district court found in its order, a jury is capable of understanding the testing's limitations and giving the evidence its appropriate weight. And I think, as Justice Frydenberg was discussing, it is important to point out that this is not the type of sexual assault case where the victim does not know her assailant, and that DNA evidence is necessary for the identification of a suspect. The three victims in this case testified that they were sexually assaulted by their mother's live-in boyfriend. At trial, Bishop testified that the major YSTR DNA profile matches Tucker at all the locations obtained, meaning that he was not excluded as a potential major source of the DNA tested. The evidence shows that that means one in 1,842 chance of a random unrelated African-American individual matching that profile. Thus, those statistics, while they do not have the weight that autosomal DNA evidence would have, it does corroborate the victim's testimony in this case, and there is nothing overly prejudicial about that.
I understood some of what opposing counsel was arguing to be that there are some ways in which YSTR testing works that 1 in 1,842 number might not be accurate. So there was talk about geographic substructuring and, right, and partial matches. Could you respond to those arguments?
Yes. I will admit I'm in a little disadvantage. I kind of came into this case late, and I think the brief does a very good job, the state's brief, setting out the specific arguments that were made on this. But my understanding is that he focuses on the databases utilized and the testimony and the evidence presented at the pretrial hearing establishes that these databases are widely used and accepted in the scientific community. They also take into consideration his concern regarding these regional pockets with low genetic diversity. The state's expert also testified that she read all the articles that he was relying on to show that these databases are unreliable, and she did not find these articles relevant for various reasons. Those reasons were they were very small sample sizes, they were published in the early 2000s, and YSTR DNA has improved tremendously since then. And because the U.S. database was not even established at that time. But as I noted, the database is accepted in the scientific community. It is provided under the guidelines to use these two databases that were used in this case, and the scientific community also approves the statistic computation that was used in this case. The last thing I would like to point out, excuse me, regarding the jury in this case and the fact that the jury was given this evidence regarding the YSTR DNA testing and the low probability. I think this jury, more than any other jury, would clearly understand that this was a lower probative value than the autosomal, because they were all presented with autosomal DNA testing regarding the semen that was found in the rug from the living room floor. In that DNA testing, which was the traditional autosomal DNA testing, it was a 1 in 752.4 quintillion chance of it being an unrelated individual. And so clearly the jury in this case, while this evidence did corroborate the victim's testimony, it did not in any way prejudice the defendant on an improper basis. Regarding the sufficiency and excessive sentence, I will submit those on the brief unless this court has any additional questions.
Thank you very much. We have no time for rebuttal, is that correct?
Yes.
There's no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.